Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Summer's here. Vacationers are hitting the roads and the skies. If it's skies, here's what they get. A welter of fees at every turn, long airport lines, slow barefoot shuffles through security checks, hours jammed in what can feel like a flying toothpaste tube. The faces at baggage claim can tell a story of simmering anger and disbelief, of feeling fleeced and squeezed all along the way in air travel these days. This hour on Point, the misery of air travel. You can join the conversation. Have you flown lately? Felt how miserable it's become? Does it have to be like this? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Little taste of the good old days. Maybe they were never so perfectly great, but there was a time when going up in the air was supposed to be even a pleasure, what the jet age was supposed to look like. Smiling passengers, sipping cocktails, nibbling hors d'oeuvres. Here they are in a 1958 Pan Am ad promoting its new Boeing 707 jetliners.
Near sonic speed, but inside one of the most stunning discoveries. There is no feeling of movement at all. No vibration, hardly any sound. A new concept in air transportation. The travail has been taken out of travel.
The travail taken out of travel, but believe me, no more. Joining me first today from New York City is Michelle Higgins. She writes the Practical Traveler column for the New York Times Travel Magazine. Michelle, thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Look, you know, it's not like I jet all over the world all the time. I'm working in the studio, but I had a flight just to Chicago and back recently, and it just practically overwhelmed me how miserable this could be at almost every step now, Michelle. It's from buying to getting through security to getting on planes that are always jam-packed. The seats seem smaller than ever. You know, there's no food, there's no snack. Good luck to you unless you're paying, and you're paying for everything. Is it just me, Michelle, or are people not happy with this?
Well, I think that many flyers have a similar experience these days. Over the past few years, and this will come as no surprise to anyone who's gotten on a plane this summer, flying in coach has become an increasingly miserable experience. Passengers are, you know, tightly packed together because they're trying to get as many paying passengers on board. Hot meals have been eliminated. Ditto on pillows and blankets, and services or amenities that used to be free, things like checked bags or food on board, are now only available if you pay for them.
I'm looking here at the annual American Customer Satisfaction Index, and they rate 47 industries. They talk to consumers about what they think of them. Airline travel tied for dead last, not tied with newspapers of all things, but tied for dead last among 47. What has brought us to this point, Michelle? What's going on? I mean, I know it's not 1958 anymore, and we've got everybody flying, but does it have to be this bad?
Right. Well, the fact is that airlines flying so close to full capacity today have realized that they really don't have to cater to economy passengers anymore, the people in coach, most of whom are booking on price specifically, and who increasingly have no real loyalty to the airlines because the cost of doing so would never be worth it in pure bottom line terms. It's really coming down to the bottom line for carriers. That's why they're charging for extra, you know, for the things that used to be free, cutting back on service.
I mean, you've written about a generation of flyers who now view getting on a plane as roughly akin to entering the ninth circle of hell. The interesting thing, it starts even when you're just trying to buy the ticket because you cannot tell what it's going to cost you to fly, Michelle. I mean, I'm reading here, even like corporate, you know, travel managers don't know how much to allocate their business travelers for flights because when all the fees come sneaking in there, you don't know up front what it's going to be.
Right. The fees are a real challenge right now because just in the last few years is when we've really seen airlines add on all of these additional fees for baggage, for meals, for canceling or changing reservations, for advanced or upgraded seating, you know, all these things. Talking to a ticket agent sometimes will cost you, depending on what you're asking for. So you know, the government is actually trying to get airlines to disclose these fees up front prominently on their websites. And that's something that they're working on, and, you know, the airlines have asked for some more time on doing that, but that's expected to go into effect later this year.
Now, one of the consequences of the baggage fees, and that's just one, we'll talk about space on the plane. It seems so incredibly tight unless you buy your way out of bondage there, but it means that everybody wants to carry their luggage on. So you've got this ton of luggage in the passenger compartment now. Every square inch of the overhead compartments just filled, things tumbling out, people struggling back down the aisle when the plane's ready to take off to hand their bag off because there's nowhere to put it. I mean, do the airlines see this as a problem, Michelle, or is it just fine? The travelers get bumped around, but we'll get by.
Well, that's one of the most frustrating things for travelers, right? Airlines are still trying to kind of sell the flying experience as somewhat glamorous, like it used to be back in the day, right? And it's setting the passengers up for certain expectations, you know, that they're going to have space for their carry-on, you know, but they're charged for the fee, they're trying to get around the fee, you know, there's this fight for space in the overhead bins, and it just becomes a mess.
They don't seem to care. You quoted the chief executive of Spirit Airlines a little while back, Ben Baldanza by name, and he was there was a passenger who I guess had had a delayed flight and wanted to be compensated for that. He'd missed his plans wherever he was headed. That's hardly a rare story. And the Spirit Airlines CEO's response he sent to an employee, but it was reply also. It went out to the world. His employee was Pasquale, and he said, "Please respond, Pasquale. But we owe him nothing." Speaking of the passenger here, we owe him nothing as far as I'm concerned. Let him tell the world how bad we are. He's never flown us before anyway, and he'll be back when we save him a penny. That attitude that, you know, good luck, get lost, fly us or don't fly us, we don't care.
Right. Well, that, again, it kind of signals what it's come down to for many airlines, which is it's all about simple economics. The passengers in coach, you know, they're not going to give away anything to the passengers. The coach, you're going to pay for it. In the front of the plane, however, it's a different experience. The story is much different in the front of the plane. It's not just things like, you know, four-course meal served on China and, you know, business class passengers on overseas flights, you know, the blanket still awaits you. They're getting, you know, live back seats, that kind of thing. So, you know, it's a different story in the front of the plane, and it's because business class and first class passengers, while they're a small majority on board, they are most of the profit for the airlines.
Michelle Higgins, please stand by there in New York. I want to welcome into our conversation from Napa, California, Kate Hannai. She's executive director of FlyersRights.org. It's a consumer advocacy group she started in 2006 to represent airline passengers. Kate Hannai, thanks very much for being with us.
No, thanks for having me.
Listen, is it just me? I mean, I'm taller than the average. I'm 6'4". Maybe that's my problem. Maybe I need to be smaller. But I just find it misery lately, and I'm feeling fleeced every time I walk into an airport, as if the airlines have finally got it all figured out, how to sort of, you know, squeeze you into the smallest possible space and get every penny out of your pocket, dump you out sort of exhausted and feeling abused at the other end of the line. Is it just me?
It's absolutely not just you. We are a receptacle at FlyersRights.org for the hostility that has been created by the airlines towards the passengers, and to sum it up, the words callous disregard really sum up the feelings of the passengers. People love to travel. They just hate the getting there.
I mean, and, it almost feels like a physical challenge now.
It is. And you say you're 6'4". My older son, who's 26, is 6'4". And when we were stuck for 13 hours in that plane on December 29th of 2006, he lost the circulation in one of his legs. We were in coach. Could have upgraded, but had no idea we'd be sitting in an MD-80 that long. So, you know, it really is akin to hostage taking or just complete mistreatment. It's unbelievable the stories that we hear. And although Michelle is completely correct in her assessment of things, we hear the more nefarious side effects of many of the airline's protocols, such as, you know, theft from baggage at TSA checkpoints, carry-on baggage being checked and then lost and having no coverage in the contract of carriage, people being bumped and there's no regulation to limit the number of seats that an airline can oversell, and then not being offered the appropriate bumping compensation, Or people entering aircraft and getting a seat and then not being seated next to each other, and they weren't aware in the contract of carriage they could be moved. There are so many things that can happen to upset the travel experience, and the airline simply, it looks to us that they don't care.
I mean, not to mention these days, it used to be, you know, you bought a ticket on a flight, you show up, you got seated, you went on. These days, if you don't have a seat assigned before you show up there, it seems like it's as if you didn't buy the ticket at all. It seems as if there's no obligation. You know, I'm sorry, we're full, you didn't have a seat assignment, but I bought a ticket on this flight.
It's funny, I've been quoted many times as saying, if you don't have a seat assignment, you don't have a seat. Don't even bother going to the airport. Because what the experience that we've had is thousands of people calling our hotline with no seat assignment. They go to curbside, they check their bag, they get to the gate, they don't get a seat, but their bag travels anyway.
Haven't I purchased some contract on travel when I buy a ticket?
It's a unilateral contract. It's not bilateral, and everything was designed to protect the airlines, not you. And if you don't read your 80-page contract of carriage, which 99% of passengers don't, you don't know how little protection you have. And really, you need to be an attorney to dissect the legalese in the contract to fully understand what you can and can't have. We read in the contract of carriage before our miserable flight in 2009 that if you were stuck for a protracted length of time on the tarmac, they'd have to give you some granola bars and water. But at the end of that sentence, there was a caveat. It said, we're not liable if we don't provide it.
It's a nice idea, but good luck to you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we're talking today about the misery of air travel. All too often these days, the crowding, the fees, the waits, the torture today of just getting from A to B in the skies. Back in the day, a little different. Here's a commercial, at least, from 1971. United Airways introducing its new DC-10.
Its engines, the quietest ever built. Inside, specially designed coach seats that are big. And a spacious lounge in coach. The Friendship Room. The United DC-10 Friendship. A plane designed to please everybody.
Big, spacious, lounge, Friendship, forget about it. Here's a scene from Seinfeld. A couple years back with Elaine here, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Desperate to get out of coach class hell, she sneaks into first class, steals an empty seat, gets caught by the stewardess.
Excuse me.
What? Oh, no, nothing for me, thank you.
What is your name?
Elaine Bennis.
You're going to have to go back to coach.
No, but there was nobody sitting here.
Yes, but you're still not allowed. These seats are very expensive.
Oh, no, please don't send me back there. Please, I'll do anything. It's so nice up here. You know, it's so comfortable up here. I don't want to go back there. Please don't send me back there.
please don't send me back there. Michelle Higgins joins us today from the New York Times. She writes the Practical Traveler column for the Times Travel Magazine. You can link to her her column at our website, onpointradio.org. Kate Hannai is here, Executive Director of FlyersRights.org, joins us from Napa, California. Let's go to our listeners. Mike in Lebanon, New Hampshire. Mike, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm listening to you today because I'm not in Florida, which is where I was supposed to be. I had a flight out of Burlington yesterday, drove over an hour there, parked, two kids, waited for 3 hours, mechanical problems. They ended up ultimately canceling our flight. They didn't give me back what I paid to check my luggage, forget about all my other expenses, and offered me a flight tonight, which was unacceptable, 24 hours later.
So you're right in the midst of flying hell, but you're not even on the plane. Once you get on, you know, then you get into the sardine can.
Right. We opted to go home, and they told us we would have to call to get back what we paid for the flight, not to mention checking our bag and everything else. So we still have to deal with all that.
Mike, I wish you good luck there. Hope you're in Florida and enjoying it soon. Maybe, I don't know, how do you do it if not flying? I guess there isn't another way. Kim in Wakefield, Massachusetts. Kim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I called because the last time we flew to Florida. Exactly. We decided we'd fly direct air through Worcester.
Okay.
Thinking we'd, you know, we're on a budget, so we went there with our two-year-old. We were in the airport for 5 hours when the plane could finally land because there was fog. We didn't even know fog could be an issue.
But that's not the airline's fault. Weather is weather. They can't help that.
And the staff the whole time was so nice and very, very kind to us.
Okay, that's good.
When the plane landed, we realized that the people coming out of the plane had literally gotten on that plane 8 hours ago, and they had been trapped on the plane, and we all breathed a sigh of relief. Oh, my God, thank God we weren't on that plane. We were just trapped in the airport for 5 hours. So, and now this weekend, because we've become accustomed to being able to visit our family across country for a certain amount of money, we're going to go to Indiana, and we've decided actually to drive 14 hours with our two-year-old because we think it might be a better option.
Just might be more comfortable driving with a two-year-old for 14 hours than trying to fly. Kim, I appreciate your call as well. Michelle, Kate, I mean, a response online here. You know, Jeff says, I don't travel by air unless it's really necessary. Heath says, it's work. It's worse than taking the Greyhound. And Corey says, I'd be happy to let them fondle my bits and pieces with a smile on my face. I guess he's thinking TSA and security. If they just make the bleep seats a little bigger, you got to be built like a jockey to be comfortable in them. Kate, what has gone on with seats? I mean, sometimes I get in there and suddenly I think, my God, this is just not possible.
This is a huge issue. You know, even after deregulation, there were hearings before Congress that were called in-cabin safety hearings that addressed legroom. But the truth is there's no limit to the length which they can go to put seats closer together. There's no regulation. The only regulation that exists is for the aisle width and the exit row legroom and the width and height of the door and the amount of drop out of the exit door. So this is a huge problem because the FAA has regulations that says in case of an emergency, you should be able to exit the aircraft in 90 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And that is nearly impossible the way the seat configurations are now in coach class.
I mean, you watch people, you know, trying to climb out to get to the lav, and it's a circus. You've got to be
right.
A gymnast.
That's right. And, you know, I'd like to say also, this whole baggage fee refund issue that Mike brought to us when he called in,
mm-hmm.
They have to refund his baggage fee. And if they don't, he can call our hotline or go to our website at Flyers Rights, and we help him for free file a complaint with the Department of Transportation. The mechanical delay always should come with some form of help from the airline if you need taxis, food vouchers, or hotels. So there are many things the airlines just flat deny, almost like I call it insurance company, you know, 100% denial the first time you ask. And then if you up-level it, you can usually get what it is you're due. And I think that's part of passenger frustration. There's a new website now. I can't remember the name, but what it is comparing the cost of driving versus flying. And you can tell them exactly where you are, and it will tell you exactly how long it will take to do both, including security.
Yeah, yeah.
And all the costs. And in general, people are choosing driving.
Up level, including blood pressure. Michelle Higgins, I mean, your headline has been about class conflict once you're on the plane. Now, when it comes to seat size, the airlines seem to have really kind of figured this out. I mean, it's almost a racket. You can buy a regular ticket. But it's barely physically possible, which is a very strong encouragement to pay more, to get a little more, a few inches more legroom up front. But it's almost a kind of extortion. You're buying a ticket to fly, but it's barely, you know, manageable as a human being. So you really have to pay that extra $30 or something to get that extra 4 inches.
Right. Any seat that has a little extra leg room these days is going to cost you more, it seems. You know, JetBlue charges more for some of its more leg room in coach, which it highly advertises. And people pay for it because it's unbearable to sit in some of those coach class seats, especially if you have long legs. And, you know, in fact, there's a product that you can get on the Internet that's a little gadget that you can squeeze onto the seat in front of you that prevents the person in front of you from reclining into you. And that, of course, causes many fights in coach. But, you know, it's people are desperate, you know, for some comfort in coach class. What we keep hearing from, you know, people who call in and people who talk about their most recent experiences on board is, I think, one of the most common threads is this feeling of helplessness. You know, they show up at the airport, they're on time, they're probably there a couple hours in advance to make sure they get through security and, you know, they get there and then all of a sudden their flight is canceled on them, right? Just like we
heard
earlier. And what they're expressing, what the frustration comes from, is they don't really have many options. You know, they're being told, no, we can't compensate you. You know, the best we can do is 3 days from now get you on a new flight. So there's this feeling of, you know, what can we do? Stop flying? Well, yeah, you might be able to drive, you know, cross country even, like some people are doing. But if you're flying overseas, you know, there really aren't a lot of options.
So there you are, stuck on the plane. What? How do you figure the economics of this, Michelle? Do the airlines have any interest in turning this around, or is air travel, unless you're, you know, got the bucks to pay out for legroom, is it just in coach? Is it just this is the way it's going to be?
Well, it's kind of a push and pull situation, right? Because as a passenger, many passengers do want and shop for the cheapest airline ticket, if they're flying coach especially, right? There's, you know, various websites that help you do that. And, you know, if you're going to fly for the cheapest price, then the airlines are not going to be willing to give any extras.
Michelle Higgins with the New York Times Travel Magazine. She writes the Practical Traveler column there. Michelle, we're really grateful to you for being with us today. Thanks for joining us for a few minutes.
Thank you.
Kate Hanai, what about this? You know, the web has made it easy to compare fares. Consumers want the lowest fare, and they very, very often grab for it. And so, you know, the airline defense might well be, you get what you pay for. The fares have been driven so far down, and this is what that buys. Deal with it.
Well, it's exactly right. I think the airlines are competing on the lowest fares, and that's all they care about. They don't care about the fact that you can't find most of the cost of your ticket, including your baggage fees, your aisle seat, window seat, your seat belt. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But, you know, really, it is impossible to figure out what the total cost of your flight is. Now, what we notice, like you were talking about Spirit Airlines earlier, you know, every single thing with Spirit is unbundled. When you buy a fare on Spirit, you can get them, I think, for as low as a dollar. But you'll pay for your carry-on bag, you'll pay for your checked bag, you'll pay for every single thing will be outside of what's quoted to you on the website as an unbundled fee.
It just gets you through the door of the airplane, and then the meter begins.
That's correct. Now, their customer service is so horrible that when people get burned by them, that's when we hear from them. And then they realize, gee, I'm never traveling Spirit again. And a lot of people think, and they're correct to think that, especially in the case of Spirit, most of the complaints we get of a smaller air carrier are from Spirit Airlines. And so a lot of people are migrating to different air carriers and paying more. I know I did. I migrated to Virgin America because their customer service was better. They don't make as many mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
They're happy.
Mm-hmm.
They're friendly when you get on board the aircraft. And yes, you do have to pay extra for the extra legroom, but it's in general a very small price. And there are a number of other things that they'll include for that upgrade. So
there's,
you know,
the market working in a good way if you know enough to know not to go where it's going to be straight up hell.
That's exactly correct. And where we get involved at Flyers Rights is when we see something that we think has gone beyond a customer service issue, either into a safety issue, like I said, the legroom, you know, after 4 hours of being immobile in an aircraft, your chance of fatal blood clots doubles. And that's per the UN World Health Organization, not Kate Hanai. And it's very important for people to understand the airlines aren't going to tell you you need to get up and move around every hour. And it's almost impossible with the legroom situation the way it is now. So there's that. And whenever something crosses over into what we think is a deceptive practice, such as not knowing that you are going to probably pay 50% more for your ticket in unbundled fees, not being able to compare prices apples to apples amongst air carriers, and all of these things present frustrations for people up front, but can become even more serious than a frustration after, you know, during the course of travel.
Buyer beware, but once you're trundled and bundled in there, you don't have a lot of room to watch out for yourself. Kate Hanai, please stand by there in Napa, California. Joining us right now from Washington is Richard Abulafia. He's Vice President for Analysis at the Thiel Group, consultant to aerospace companies and clients in commercial and military aircraft. Writes for Aviation Week, Aerospace America, other publications. Richard Abulafia, excuse me. Thanks so much for being with us.
Pleasure.
So the experience can be bad. Do airlines care?
No, certainly not. There's absolutely no evidence that people will migrate away from one low-rated airline and towards a higher-rated airline. People look primarily at fares, followed closely, of course, by fares and fares, and then convenience and frequent flyer miles and everything like that. There's an awful lot of bad things that can happen in air travel these days in terms of the customer experience. It's just not really clear that it matters. And I should sort of add to that that it's not as though the airlines have a great deal of flexibility in saying, hey, let's position ourselves as the nice guys in this business. There's no group of people in the back room wearing a top hat and monocle laughing all the way to the bank. This is a business that in the best of times has razor-thin margins and in the worst of times goes bankrupt.
So, I mean, is this just what it is? And have you seen a kind of what seems like almost nefarious learning curve? They've figured out how to get you in there and then just squeeze more and more cash out at the other side. I guess the lowest fare up front to catch you, and then it almost seems like a kind of I don't know, like you're in a poker game, a poker game with card sharps.
Exactly the image of the, you know, top hat wearing monocle clad fellow. It's not that he's getting clever at ripping you off. He's getting really, really smart, and at this point he's treading water so well he's got his nose above water. Look at him. This is an industry that's locked in a desperate game for survival, and if you look at the record of value destroyed over the last decade and airlines bankrupt over the last decade, not a lot of margin for error. Now, listening to your show, it's very interesting. I think people were maybe conflating two different issues here, understandably so.
Okay.
There's concerns about traffic passenger rights that fall under the heading of dignity. And then there's those that fall under the heading of amenities. You know, under dignity, there's a lot of stuff that the various travelers' rights groups have done great work on. There's no reason at all to have people parked on the tarmac for 3 hours or never be told, when their flight is going to leave, if ever. That sort of stuff is indefensible.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's amenities, small seat pitch, no dinner, things like that. But things are cheaper than ever, and people are consistently clicking on the cheapest fare possible. There's no way to make that work. The only hope you have is to maybe unbundle some of that and get people to pay a couple bucks extra for a little extra seat room. But fares have never been cheaper. Statistically, that's borne out by numbers. And people have never, it's never been such a democratic experience, the ability to fly all over the country.
Yeah, I mean, I take your point there. And yet things just compound one on the other. Dignity lost, amenities, Kate and I taken away. Pretty soon, I mean, here we've got a listener online saying passengers themselves are a big part of the problem. The selfishness and aggression by many to get overhead space is unbelievable, and I mean, just for starters. But once it's so tight, so uncomfortable, so stripped of amenities, I mean, it just adds one more kind of lousy layer to this, Kate, that passengers themselves can become monsters in there.
It's a recipe for air rage, absolutely. There's one sort of interesting airline that I'm sure most people have some kind of familiarity with that sort of illustrates that dichotomy, though, between amenities and what you might call dignity, and that's Southwest. Southwest is ranked pretty high in the customer satisfaction surveys, and they're really good at telling you stuff and being nice to you at the end of the day, and they are also consistently about the worst in terms of overall amenities. They even make a virtue of it. You get a bag of peanuts. Don't expect more. You get relatively little seat room, but people like them because they have a nice corporate culture. They're decent to you. They're pretty good about providing information.
That counts for something, yep.
They've exploited that, or I suppose they've magnified that divergence between amenity and dignity.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about air travel and just how miserable it can be sometimes these days if you're not in a long leg seater in some kind of higher class travel. just how tough it can be. Maybe you've had the opposite experience. If you have, let us hear about it. Clue us in. We're joined by Kate Hanai. She's executive director of FlyersRights.org, joining us from Napa, California. And from Washington, Richard Abalufia is here, vice president for analysis at the Thiel Group, writes for Aviation Week, Aerospace America, and more. Let's hear a little bit more from that old sound of how lovely it was supposed to be. This is a Southwest Airlines TV ad from the 1970s. A beautiful woman walks down the tarmac, enticing business travelers.
Remember what it was like before there was somebody else up there who loved you? There was no such thing as executive class service to Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio. With first-class legroom, free cocktails for everyone, and a schedule you could depend on. Remember?
Well, remember, no, frankly, it's getting harder, I guess. Sue in Malden, Massachusetts, thanks for calling, Sue. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for your call.
Sure. What do you know?
Well, I have a little different take. I just took a trip to Detroit last week on U.S. Airways, and it couldn't have been smoother, more comfortable, even though they were overbooked on one of my flights, but I volunteered my seat. They gave me a voucher. They put me on the next flight. They're extremely professional, courteous. On the way back, my bag, there wasn't room for my carry-on bag, so they checked it, and it showed up right where it was supposed to be on time. And so I...
So perfect. So let me just... Are you like 4'10 and weigh 90 pounds, the size of a jockey, and flying first class?
Not at all.
Okay.
No.
Okay. That sounds pretty great. So you've got not a complaint in the world.
No, I that's been the case for me over the last, 8 or 10 years. And I think for me, what helps is that since 9/11, and there's been so much talk about air travel and all the, the differences in traveling between before then and after then, that I try and plan ahead. And so I use... all the different services to get the best prices, and I bring things with me. I bring my own food. I bring a book in case I get stuck on the plane. So I wear shoes that I can take on and off easily, just in preparation for all the different contingencies that can come up.
Sue, you're the savvy traveler, and you remind us to take heart here. Maybe there's a way to make it through that's not so bad. And I'm glad you did, flying out of Detroit there. Thanks for calling. Let me get one more here. Ken in Boston. Ken, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an airline captain for a major U.S. airline.
Okay.
Listening to the conversation with interest. First of all, I'd like to just take my hat off to your previous caller. I think she's got a wonderful outlook on travel, and that's kind of how you have to be these days. But I'd like to just point out that, I don't know if there's a nice way to say this, but it pretty much is you get what you pay for. My father took his first airline flight in 1961,
mm-hmm.
flew from New York to Los Angeles, and he paid about $300, which is not too far off the fares today. But at that time, you could purchase a brand new car for about $2,000.
Right, right.
So, if you were to ask for a car these days for $2,000, you'd be fairly stripped down, fair to say.
So the airfares are much, much, much lower now than then, and we get that. And if you want to pay a lot, you can still fly first class, which is pretty darn good, or you can have your own plane, if you just want to think money. But, Ken, as a captain
absolutely.
Of...
During a period of time after 9/11, when I was furloughed from my previous employer, I did fly a private jet for a couple of years, so I did get to see that side of the business, and certainly it's a nice way to go. I want to point out, when I'm at work, I do try to do everything I can to respect the dignity of the customers and smile and communicate as much as possible and help them with little things. Because we're all in this together.
Yeah, we can hear that, and I bet you're pretty good at it. But do you ever walk back and coach and see, just what's back, what's going on back there, just how, what a zoo and
do,
how crowded it can be?
It's part of our job. Occasionally, we need to be positioned to another city, so we do also sometimes, ride in the back of the aircraft, and it's tight. I'm personally 6'2". I prefer to be sitting up in the cockpit. But, you know, a little bit of perspective might be in order. I think some of it's expectations. If you were to tell anyone's great grandparents that you could fly in just about near perfect safety from coast to coast in a matter of hours, that would be fairly astonishing. But we've quickly come to accept that as the norm. And, you know, I think that's part of the deal. I'd like to just say a quick thing about the fees, because I know how irritating that is to most folks.
Yes, please, yeah.
I believe it's driven mainly by, and not to blame the consumer, but people will choose the absolute lowest ticket price, even if it's a dollar less. And for a company to include those amenities into the price, I believe it would be difficult to compete because their ticket price is going to be higher and they're not going to sell their seats for their aircraft. So they've sort of been forced by consumer behavior and the Internet to go with a fee structure, fee for a service for add-on, you know, and I agree it's been taken to extremes when you start charging for overhead space. But this is kind of it's economically driven, and I don't know what the answer is to that.
Yeah. Captain Ken, we appreciate your attitude. I bet you're pretty good on the flights, and I appreciate your calling in today. Thanks so much, and safe flying to you.
You're great at what you do. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Hey, Kate, is there a limit here, Kate? I mean, everybody's saying, well, maybe you get what you pay for, but is there a limit to how far that can be pushed? You talked about legroom, but also about pitch. Now, I'm not sure I understand exactly what pitch is, but I'm reading recently some stuff you've read about how they're talking about a seat called the Sky Rider, which you sort of sit on kind of like a saddle. I don't know, something.
We went straight to the Department of Transportation on the Sky Rider seats, and as well as the pay toilet idea, and said, you know, please don't allow this to happen. This is clearly a safety issue. Flyers' rights would have to take a magnificent stand against.
Is someone really talking about pay toilets on airplanes?
Oh, yeah. And the Department of Transportation calls us often and says, well, you know, how are your members feeling about some of these issues?
You mean like swipe your credit card to go potty?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
And what's insane is that we know there are air carriers in the U.S., such as Spirit Airlines, who would consider these options.
What about the pitch? What about the pitch issue when it comes to the seats? And what is pitch, and what's the limit?
Pitch is the measurement from the back. There is no limit. They can put the seats as close together as they want. There is no regulated limit. And that what we often see is that airlines, in order to capitalize on revenues, will jam seats in the back of a plane with, you know, 6 inches or 8 inches between the front of the seat and the seat in front of it. And we've had people call us and say they've gotten blood clots or they've had just miserable flights where they could not move. And often the flight attendants unions want to keep you in your seat, so they keep the seatbelt lights on so you can't get up during a flight. And so there are all of these issues at hand that really work against the passenger's comfort, well-being, safety, and, yes, dignity when they fly.
Mm-hmm. Richard Abulafia, do you think there's a natural limit here? I mean, you know, back in medieval times, you know, there was a form of torture where you'd be put in kind of a space where you could barely move. And that was torture, and people understood it was torture in the dungeon. Now, is there a limit in the sky as to what airlines will offer as basic coach, you know, flight? There's not a legal limit on several dimensions, Kate tells us.
Well, there's a natural limit that's been reached several times and reacted to. The example that she cites of the pay toilet, that was one guy in Europe who's universally regarded as a showman. And it, you know, I'm sure there were people who listened for 5 seconds before throwing it out, but it was never really a threat. That whole, you know, standing room only concept, he was the one behind that too. That was blatantly illegal from the word go. In other words, we've already got mechanisms in place, be they legal and regulatory mechanisms or just natural common sense, that keep the worst ideas from being reached. And again, you know, if you want an example of one of the tighter seat classes you're going to find and one of the least good amenities you're going to find, fly one of the most popular and really nice airlines, Southwest. That gives you a great illustration of the future. It's bus travel with wings because it's what people are willing to pay for. So I don't think it's all as dire as being painted. It's not like there's that group of, you know, rapacious airline managers that just can't wait to stack people up in the back. It's a lot more complicated than that.
Heather in Norwell, Massachusetts. Heather, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just want to say I definitely vote with my dollars, and I do a lot of business travel and personal travel, mostly in the Northeast and out to the Midwest, and I almost exclusively fly Southwest. There are a lot of customer-facing features that I like, and I think the stuff that they don't do, like no meals and things like that, they're very honest about and allows you to manage your own situation prior to getting on the plane. And so I don't fly U.S. Air. It's been a horrible experience with them and very bad customer service. And for places like JetBlue, where I need to order extra legroom, it's a pretty small fee, and I'm willing to do that because it usually gets me on the plane early, and I can bring my carry-on luggage and put it in the overhead bin, so there's not as much of a fight for that.
Is there a limit to how is there a limit for you, Heather, as to how tight it could be, you know, or just how uncomfortable before you'd be calculating, well, okay, it's not exactly comfortable, but it's cheap?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I'm 5'7", so I'm not a short female, although mm-hmm. I'm not a tall guy like you. But there is a limit, and I think that if Southwest got to that point of discomfort, then I would move from them. I'm not blind to what my personal needs are, but I just think that they do the best job of accommodating what I need and what they provide for the price that they provide. And I just, their customer service is phenomenal. Their people are phenomenal. And that makes up for a lot at the end of the day, because there's things the airlines can't control, like bad weather and equipment malfunctions. But people that communicate well and are courteous and you feel like they're having fun and they're respectful and they're competent, that makes up for a lot of the, you know, the hassle.
It goes a long way. There's no question about it when it works. Heather, I appreciate your call. Here's Dorian online. Says, at least once during every now grueling air travel experience, I look another like-minded passenger in the eyes and say, remember when air travel used to be fun? We share that moment of commiseration, and off they go. Jeff writes, enough of this nonsense. Let them go broke. The airlines are asking for a consumer revolt, and they are online to get one. Kate Hennai, I'm not sure that's true. Maybe people just, you know, as bad as it is, maybe what we're learning is just brace for it. You know, it's like, I don't know, getting a vaccination or a shot. You know, you need it, and so you do it, and it's not fun, but you get there.
Well, I think to some degree that's very true. I'd like to address a couple of things. I've been to Southwest Airlines and their headquarters, and I was able to participate in an entire day from 6 in the morning until 10 o'clock at night with their management, and I participated in every meeting that they have. And let me tell you, they have a culture of customer service. And what that means is that if you're a passenger on a flight with Southwest and you have a problem, a lost bag or a delayed bag or a delayed flight or a canceled flight, anything happens, they know it. And the morning after at 7 a.m., they have a MOM meeting, an MOM meeting, and they go through every single incident. And they send out a letter and some form of compensation, whether it's a drink voucher, an apology letter. They really get on top of trying to ensure that you come back and fly them again. One of my husband's business partners is on the board of a major legacy carrier. I speak to him as sort of a deep throat source all the time about what happens at that legacy carrier. I won't say who it is or who he is, but I will tell you, those carriers do not have that culture that Southwest has adopted of ensuring that people want to come back. Now, that said, I do believe air travel for many people is no longer like an option. About 33% of our members are small business owners that have had no representation. The corporations take pretty good care of their employees when they travel, but when you own a small business and you have to get from A to B in a certain amount of time, and flight delays end up costing you so much, or flight cancellations are being bumped, the side effect to those events can be almost catastrophic for a small business owner. And I don't think that not traveling has become an option for many of these small business owners. I think they do have to sort of, pardon my language, suck it up and travel. and they try their best to find the flights that aren't delayed or that aren't canceled regularly and try to get a read on what their experience is going to be like before they travel, and they're often still caught unaware in certain situations of what could happen to them.
Of course, you don't have to be in business for that these days. There are so many Americans who have family who are out of driving range, and if you want to see them, you hear on Facebook, Anthony says, the airline industry is taking advantage of the fact that we live in a distributed world, family all over, business all over, with no fast, viable travel option to compete with air travel. They have a long-distance travel monopoly. Now, of course, Richard Abulafia, that's not entirely true. You could take a train, but you know how long that takes, or a bus, or even drive. But from the tenor of your perspectives here, Richard, it seems like this is just what we've got, and it's what it's going to be. What about the consumer revolt threat we hear in our online comments?
Well, you know, some of them made a great deal of sense. There's a number of contradictions here, though. Number one, I mean, first and foremost, this is some kind of right that you have as a member of society to fly. I don't get that at all. I mean, at the end of the day, this is still something of a, even if it isn't treated like a luxury like it was in the past, this is something that, well, it's useful, it's a tool, it's a wonderful thing, but it's not as though it's something that you can't live without, even if you are a businessman. Now, for a couple of other things, number one, exactly right, there should be an emphasis on looking towards the carriers that give you the better service, but very often they're the ones that give you fewer amenities, and Southwest is that great example. I mean, one minute there's this example cited of blood clots. Well, they're quite likely, you know, well, first of all, I don't think they happen as nearly as much as people think, but if they are more likely to happen in economy class, then you're going to get them in the service that Southwest offers. But people like the wonderful dignity that they give you, so they tend to like that. You know, I think there's a number of contradictions here.
Contradictions, pains, trade-offs. At the end of the day, we just hope we get where we're going, and it hasn't been too bad. For those who do it and do it well, I will watch and try and learn here, and I'm grateful to the two of you for joining us today. Richard Abulafia with the Teal Group in Washington, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, pleasure.
And Kate Hennie with FlyersRights.org. Kate, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.